you know, go work for somebody that's in elected office, go see and touch and feel what it's like to be in that space and see if you like it. Some people come into the government space and they stay. Some people are in the political space and they just want to do campaigns. They don't want to do the governing piece, right?
Welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. What if you could hang out with high-performing executives, entrepreneurs, and leaders? Ask them about how psychedelics have impacted their self-improvement journeys. Then take an insight or two to guide your own growth. Each week, Alex Atwood takes an in-depth look at how psychedelics can increase fulfillment, solve personal problems affecting your career, and help you gain the success you seek. Alex is an executive and psychedelics coach to high performers, and his goal is to provide strategies to help you reduce conflict, bring awareness, and balance your life through the use of psychedelics. Now, here's Alex.
Everyone, welcome to the Alchemist Lounge. And today in the lounge, we have a very special treat for you. We have the current mayor of Scranton, Pennsylvania, Paige Cognetti. She started in January 2020, which was a very interesting time to start any job, particularly one in politics. And when I told my daughter that I was interviewing the mayor of Scranton, she said, "That is such an important city." And I was like, okay, I get it. You're a huge fan of the show. But if you think about it, it's a lot more than a pop culture landmark, right? Scranton is the first city to use electricity back in 1880. I think I have that date right. First electric trolley back in the late 1800s. And our current president, Joe Biden, hails from Scranton, Pennsylvania. So Scranton is indeed an important city, aside from the cultural office landmarks that are spread across. So really excited to talk to you. You have a very intriguing journey. I see that you used to teach in Japan. And I'm really curious, what brought you to politics?
Yeah, if you asked me when I was 22 what I was going to be when I grow up, I would have told you I was going to teach English literature on some leafy campus somewhere in the world, and it was going to be so cool. Then I spent 2 years in Japan after undergrad and got really wrapped up more in kind of the geopolitical scene and realized that I wanted to be in government. I wanted to get back to the States and be a part of shaping what America's foreign policy looked like, what America's domestic policy looked like. And so moved to DC when I was 25. Actually, my 25th birthday, I got on a plane and flew with a suitcase to DC. And I lived with my buddy from high school and his, like, you know, it was like one of those big flop houses that you live in when you're mid-20s, and ended up on a campaign in Pennsylvania. Went from there, but it really was kind of one of those like early 20s find yourself journeys. And it's been the most fun and one of those types of careers, you like every career, I think, you never know where you're going to end up.
Yeah. Well, career in politics always seemed so elusive to me. And hearing that you can just pack your stuff up and have a goal and a dream and just chase it is awesome. What was some of the most surprising things you learned when you started to get into politics?
I remember some emperor has no clothes moments working. So I was on the campaign side, but working in and around Capitol Hill, that I worked for incredible people and I adore them and I know them to this day. But some of the other members of Congress that you would meet at some of these events, you'd think this person is a what? you realize, and you're, okay, I can do this, right? We, my generation at the time, like, we can do this. We can make this better. We got to work for it and we will, but we're going to make some positive changes. And I think that's what we're doing. I certainly have met amazing friends and colleagues along the way in these last 17 years or so that I've been in this. And I think we've got a bright future ahead. While we certainly have lots and lots of challenges, I think we have a great couple of generations here that want balance for people. They want good, high quality of life for everyone. They want equity. And they want to see cities like Scranton thrive, that there's this, it's not just about New York and DC and San Francisco and LA, right? Like, no longer is it just those kind of bigger cities. Like, everyone everywhere has a place and people are finding that they can thrive in cities like Scranton, whether it's home or not. And in my case, it's not my home, right? It's my chosen home.
Yeah. Well, I want to get into that a little bit about your childhood, but I love hearing about the fact that politicians are humans, right? And humans are, there's ups, there's down, there's flaws, there's all of that that we encompass as human beings. And so learning that, hey, you know, that politician that's supposed to know it all and not make any mistakes, they're human beings. And ultimately being there for people, right? And being able to really understand what the needs are. It's just such a great place to be in terms of public service. But tell me about your journey. So you're not from originally from Scranton. Where are you from and what led you to the area?
Yeah, I'm from Beaverton, Oregon, which is the home of Nike. So grew up really the trajectory of the growth, economic growth, business development where I'm from was just up my entire life. So not only was Nike growing, but all sorts of tech companies were growing through the 80s and 90s when I was growing up and going to high school. And then Scranton, where my husband is from. So I came here on, you know, when I was 25, came here for a campaign with one of my friends and met my husband here. With his lifetime, the economy has really suffered in his hometown. So we come from these different kind of different mindsets, which has been really useful to me living here because I'm from a place where I just assume growth and I assume success for an area and a city. And I certainly don't assume it. And we don't just sit back and say, this is going to happen, but I know that it's possible. And I have that vision for what this place is going to be and can be. And that's, I think, a very helpful contrast because folks that have grown up in a place like Scranton, where the economy has had ups and downs, there've been industries that have suffered. There's been jobs that have gone overseas, especially in the last 30 years. It's tough, right? It's tough to see yourself out of those situations sometimes. So I think that we have a nice balance here in the city, in our household and here at City Hall of we've got to respect the past and where people are coming from and the frame of mind of sometimes even assuming difficulty and economic challenges and then trying to mitigate those and see always keeping in mind that big picture, always keeping in mind that big goal. For us here in Scranton, we're only two hours, 100 miles from New York. We're 100 miles from Philly. We can get down to DC in 4 hours, up to Boston in 4.5. We're really a nexus for this whole region. And that's great, not just for industry and logistics, but for people too, right? Now you can work from home or some, at least one of the people in your household may be able to work from home. You can live here and have a commute to New York. You can keep that big city job and live in a city like Scranton. All of these things are possible. We can, I think, diversify our economy even more and become that inland destination city where you can stretch out. You can buy a home. We still have relatively affordable housing here. You can buy that 5-bedroom house on that quarter of an acre that you absolutely can't attain in northern New Jersey, for example. So I think we're going to get there. It's a matter of how we grow, not if we grow. And my childhood in Beaverton really helps to shape that frame of mind.
Yeah, it's so interesting. Coming from Oregon, where absolutely there's so much possibility there in that part of the country. And then you look at what I think is like one of America's hometowns, right? Scranton. When you think of Scranton, Pennsylvania, you think of, at least I think of blue collar, you know, really salt of the earth types of folks. And coming through the political spectrum of the 80s and 90s, and now here we are today, right? I've seen a lot of sort of divisiveness happen in the last 10 years. It has to be challenging to be a politician these days. What are you finding in terms of what's really changed through your career in politics, right? Like what's different now?
Yeah, the divisiveness is certainly increased and exacerbated. That's absolutely true. Say that's more relevant on the national level and the state level. What's really cool about being in local politics, I'm coming from this having worked first on campaigns, federal campaigns, then federal government, then state government, and now local. What's great about local, right? I just had a meeting with my guys who run our refuse and our public works department. We're talking about route optimization for picking up garbage and how we're going to keep the trucks from breaking down because we were very generous with our large items, you know, furniture pickup policy. That's not partisan. There's no partisan divide about whether we make you bag your mattress or not. It's really cool to be on the local level because you can just shove all those political divides aside and get the job done. And I find that even more satisfying because I've been in DC, because I've spent time in Harrisburg. Those are tough places that need a little bit of a wake up. I think maybe we need more politicians in DC and Harrisburg who have been in local, because when you're local, you just have to kick that to the curb and move forward and solve the problem. You can't just hang out on the House floor and, you know, complain about things. Like, here I am. There's people calling right now talking about like, well, you know, something at the park. Like, we got to fix that today, right? You don't have time.
Yeah.
You don't have time for partisan divide when you're in local government.
No, makes so much sense. Yeah. I mean, when you're close to the vest and you're actually dealing with real issues that people are facing day in and day out, like, how do I get to work? What's going on with that road? What's going on with that highway, right? Like, there isn't time. And what I'm hearing is, like, politicians in Washington, it is so divisive because possibly they're not as close to the vest just based on where they are. The federal government sort of has to see things in sort of a macro cosm, right?
Right.
So that is really interesting. So drilling down on that, sort of that local perspective, what are some of the challenges that you're facing there, right? To being a local politician with so much responsibilities.
Yeah. Being a mayor is the coolest job. It really, really, really is. And, you know, any mayor you talk to is going to say that. It's very challenging because you do have everything from, I need to understand refuse routes, and I also need to understand what our law enforcement challenges are. I need to know what's going on in our EMS and fire space. I need to know what's going on in the parks and our community development. What grants are we eligible for in our economic development space? It's so wide, and it's so fun for that reason, right? Every day is different. One big challenge we have, and it is communications. So we just did an equity plan, and we haven't released it publicly yet, but the results will show a lot of folks don't know how to get a hold of us. And, you know, we feel like we're very accessible, right? We've got, when we came in, there was no social media for the city. There was no, you could call the mayor's office, but it was just like a phone number. We started our own little 311. You can email into 311, you can call, or you can go on our website. There's a drop-down menu you can pick. So we feel that we're very accessible, but clearly that's not the case as much as we want it to be, because we still have people saying they don't know how to get a hold of us. So communication is always a challenge. How do you, and part of that is the biggest challenge, how do you make people feel safe, like they belong and like they matter? And so first and foremost, our job is safety. We want to make sure that you can safely get to work. We want to make sure that you can safely go about your life and raise your children and make a living and get to the healthcare that you need. But we also want to make sure that you feel like you belong. How do we better make people feel that sense of community and that they matter, right? That, like, we want you to feel that you matter. You do matter to us. We want you to feel that way. That's a lot of trust that needs to be built. That's a challenge. It's always a challenge. COVID did not help. That was a tough go. Remember in 2020, the biggest challenge we thought for the year was going to be the census. We're like, okay, how are we going to do all the things I just mentioned and have people sign a document that says how many people are in their household? Well, forget that. That was like, how are we making sure that people don't die? Yeah. So, you know, the census was as big of a success as we could possibly have made it given the circumstances, but it was really challenging. But the census is a great micro example of trust. If you have trust, people feel that they are safe, they'll fill out the census. We have people not filling out the census. People aren't even feeling safe, right? They don't feel safe. They don't trust the government to even say how many people live in their household. Then you've got issues. We can't do anything as a city, a state, a country, if we don't have that trust and that, you know, really that bond between how people feel, how people living somewhere feel about their local government, how they feel about their national government, not from a political standpoint, but from a standpoint of safety. And I think, you know, in real time, what we're seeing with the East Palestine train derailment, right? Mm. Not a lot of trust going on right now. And so if you don't build up that trust beforehand, situations like that are going to be worse. And also, you can build up all the trust you want. If that trust is broken, it can be broken in a nanosecond. And so our biggest challenge is always, how do we keep building trust? And how do you sustain that? And how do you always be mitigating for that moment? You know, as a mayor, you always fearful of what's that? What is that shoe that's going to drop? What is that thing that's going to happen that could happen? Sadly, in America, it's like, is there going to be a school shooting in my city? Is there going, like, are we going to have a mass shooting somewhere? Like, there's those types of things that you do kind of live in fear of. It still is the greatest job. Don't let me argue another way. It really is. But it does not come without its midnight sweats.
Well, you are responsible for quite a bit. And as I'm hearing about local politics, what's coming to mind is just, you know, how responsible mayors are. I saw a newscast the other day about the East Palestine. The mayor there, of course, speaking for the city, right? The voice of the city. And then we think about during 9/11, when Giuliani seemed to be a different person, but he was also the speaker of New York City at the time, right? And so you are absolutely responsible and suddenly elevated into this role that could be national really at any time. And what I heard was when you're providing safety and you're providing accessibility and you're providing responsiveness and engagement with the community, that's very much like relationships that you have, you know, personal relationships, professional relationships. It actually seems to, you know, branch out to the entire community of the city for you. Tell me a little bit more about what it was like to take on the role of mayor of Scranton and then 3 years later be responsible for this massive pandemic in everyone's life. What was that like for you?
Yeah, well, go back on a personal. So we had a baby December 20th of 2019. Then I was sworn in January 6th of 2020. I was a brand new mom for the first time and a mayor within 2.5 weeks. We were already having a wild time at the Cognetti household. Luckily, my mom was with us and is actually still with us almost all of the time. Thank God we wouldn't be able to do any of this. But we came in, and the backstory on the office here is that unfortunately, the person who was elected before me is now in federal prison for extortion and bribery. He used this office to pad his ceiling full of cash. And so when I talk about trust, it is not just the usual, we need to build back trust. You really have to rebuild trust because the former mayor used this office for his own personal gain. So coming in, we thought our challenges were census and generally building back trust and getting back on a fiscal track, fixing a lot of the internal issues that come with having poor management at best. So we thought those would be the challenges. They certainly still are. And I'm so proud of the work and the team that we've built. We're just getting through so many things in these few years, but the pandemic hitting right as we came in was tough. So fortunate. I was able to be part of a boot camp for mayors in December of 2019. In the months before the pandemic hit, went down to the U.S. Conference of Mayors. We have a regional mayors group here that we've formed. So we had lots of support and lots of other mayors. I was a part of a cohort that was ended up being online, but it was the Mayor's Innovation Project. And so mayors from all over the place, and we're going through the pandemic together. Bloomberg Philanthropies and the Johns Hopkins University and the U.S. Conference of Mayors had weekly calls, which were absolutely invaluable. So you felt, even though it was so intense, I never felt alone. I felt like I always had support on a national level from other people in my job, which was just an incredible thing. And I think has shaped how we govern here. It's shaped the fact that we always are looking to others for support. We tried not to ever reinvent the wheel. We shouldn't have to do that. There are thousands of cities around the country that have had the same challenges that we have. So we always try to seek those solutions and see what can fit here in Scranton, which has helped us not just solve problems, but it helps us build relationships. And now I'm in a neat situation where 3 years in, you know, people start to ask me what solutions we have. And that's very gratifying.
Mm, yeah. I mean, having that support mechanism of mayors and having that community to fall back on and to share ideas with really allow for some strength there. I love that. Do you have any personal rituals that you do? Any sort of like anything that kind of keeps you going when you run into these type of situations?
It's nice to be raising a toddler at the same time you're mayor, because all the lessons that like Daniel Tiger, the cartoon, that Daniel's learning, like if you're angry, breathe and count to four. Those apply to all of us, right? As adults.
Yeah.
So lately I've been like, all right, I'm going to breathe. I'm going to count to four, just like Daniel Tiger. We're going to go. So I'd say in this moment in my life, I'm employing the Daniel Tiger, also the Let It Go from Frozen. My daughter is obsessed with Elsa and Frozen right now. So I just have Let It Go in my head all the time because it's playing in our household most hours of the day. And so that does help me, I guess, a little mantra.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because you're learning from the kids and you're learning from your environment. I mean, you can learn a lot from them, right? I mean, they really get it.
Yeah. Yeah. The kids get it. Oh, they get it. Nothing gets by my three-year-old. You got to be on your best behavior all the time for them, but also for yourself and try not to get angry. And it's been a very nice parallel raising a little one, trying to make sure that they're full of kindness and positivity, which is the same.
Absolutely.
You know, that's the most basic skill for being a mayor is, I'd say, kindness and positivity.
That's right. And learning it from your kids is beautiful. And learning it from children in general is beautiful because it is challenging to have such responsibilities there, right? And the buck stops here, right? When it comes to that. When you think about public service, right? What do you think the most important thing is that public servants should focus on? And we've talked about a few things, but I'd like to know what you feel are the most important of them.
I think it goes back to that trust piece. If you don't have trust, you don't have anything. And that on the political, like in the pure political sense, that's where authenticity comes in. If you're not authentic, if you are not your authentic self, you maybe you'll win a couple elections, but you're not going to get where you want to go, right? Like just look at, and you can study, I'm such a nerd, I do this all the time, but like looking at different political ads and things like that, or, you know, somebody announced for president yesterday and I watched their video and I was like, this is so inauthentic, right? There's nothing that this person is saying in this very overly produced video that it makes me feel connected to them. If you can't make that connection, if you don't have that, if you're not just yourself, if you're not being yourself, it's not going to work.
Oh, that's beautiful. That authenticity piece is just, for me and leaders that I've spoken with, specifically in the business world or in the nonprofit world, one of the words I hear a lot, well, two of the words I hear a lot, I should say, are authenticity and vulnerability, right? And I think that might be something that business leaders are starting to learn now. Hey, be vulnerable in front of your employees, because that's really not a weakness. It connects. What are your thoughts around that? Like, can politicians be vulnerable in the sense, in a way to connect with their constituents?
I believe so. I mean, you have to, it can't be all the time, right? But certainly during the pandemic, and we did Facebook Lives twice a week and then down to once a week. I mean, I was extremely vulnerable on those. We were living the pandemic just like anyone else, right? I mean, we were leading and trying to stay on top of things and doing the best we could. End of the day, my other mayor friends, other people in the positions of authority, we're trying to make sure our families are safe, right? So there's a lot of vulnerability in there. To me, it's impossible for me not to convey that. I get welled up with emotion and nearly tears and things. And I did that all the time during that. It's just who I am and it's how I was feeling. And that was the beginning of my time in elected office. So I think for me, it's always going to be that way. I'm not going to be afraid of showing emotion because of that. And I understand that that's a generational luxury, right? Generations older than us don't have that luxury because they were told to can it and never show emotion. So I'm grateful for being, having lived in the spaces that I've lived in because so I feel like I can do that. But you have to be able to, again, be authentic. And if being authentic is showing your vulnerability, then that's what you should do. If you're always stiff, if you're not real to people, it's just not going to work.
Yeah, that rings so true. And I can tell you so many political speeches or political ads that I see contain inauthenticity at its max. And when you find someone like you, who's just an authentic person, right? And you're just, you know, you're here and you're a human being and you have strengths and vulnerabilities, but you're really dedicated to trust and safety and to your constituents and to yourself and to your family. I mean, isn't that what leadership is all about? I think it might be. I think that might have a piece to do with it. Let's chat a little bit about Scranton itself, right? And specifically, when you took on a leadership in terms of being mayor of Scranton, what are some things in terms of people that are considering moving to the area or people that are interested in learning more about why Scranton is the place to raise a family or start a career? What are some things you tell people about that? We'll get on sort of the tourism board a little bit here and learn a little bit more of that piece of Scranton.
Absolutely. So this has only gotten more true in the 3 years that I've been in office, but the affordability here is really hard to find in other places. You can have a nice home with a yard and be able to be at, you know, work somewhere outside of the home. You can be there probably within 10 or 20 minutes. Your kid's school is probably 10 or 20 minutes away. Here, I'm never more than 10 minutes away from my daughter or my husband, and we don't have traffic issues. We live, the larger valley is about 600,000 people. The city is 80,000 in a county of 220,000. It's a really nice size, as we've got, you know, right across the street from me, we've got the cultural center where there are Broadway shows, incredible restaurants. We have great music, great art. We have 3 hospitals here in the city. We have all these amenities. We have 6 colleges right in the city, including the University of Scranton, which is a very good Jesuit institution. So we have kind of elements of everything without dealing with the traffic, without dealing with the 2-hour commute, those types of things. So the quality of life here is really rich. We can go skiing or tubing 10 minutes from here. We can see the slope from our house in the city. You can fish, you can go kayaking, you can go hiking, all these different things that are 15 minutes away, 20 minutes away. So that quality of life is really important and really, really excellent for not just families, but also for retirees. You know, not every retiree wants to go to Florida and the Carolinas, right? Some people want to stay somewhere else. For me, I would say come to Pennsylvania. It's a 3% income tax at the state level. It's a heck of a lot less money than in New Jersey, in New York, or Connecticut. Like it's all the more reason to come here, be here. You know, we've got natural resources and it's a cool place.
I'm ready to come. I'm ready to come there now. It sounds like an ideal place to raise a family and have a career. I mean, you're close to this major cities, right? It's the leadership is looking at safety as being a really important piece of what they do. And I know that's in the sort of a political mindset now. So that's awesome. And having you here to sing the praises of it feels really good. You have this journey into politics that I'd like to be able to share in terms of people looking to pursue a career in politics. What advice would you give to someone who's interested in doing that these days, right? Because it's a lot different than when you started your career.
Oh man, yeah, make me feel old. I don't know if it's that different. My advice is still to go work on a campaign and go feel what that's like. In parallel to that, either or, you know, work in an office like here in my office. You know, go work for somebody that's in elected office. Go see and touch and feel what it's like to be in that space and see if you like it. Some people come into the government space and they stay. Some people are in the political space and they just want to do campaigns. They don't want to do the governing piece, right? Best campaigners out there never want to touch the government stuff, right? It's not their thing. But you have to be agile. You have to want both. If you really want to be the person, you have to want both. So for young people, I would say you want to get on that campaign. If you can, you also want to do a stint working for an elected official in their office and see the government side and see the political side. They're very different, and you can't be great at either if you don't understand both.
Beautiful advice. You know, that authenticity really resonates when you speak, and I'm looking forward to seeing so much from you, Paige. What's next for Mayor Paige Cognetti?
We have a lot to do here, so we are busting to try to get this passenger rail link from Scranton to New York. Alex, it used to exist. Some brainiac in 1970 cut the passenger rail line. We used to be able to just hop on a train from Scranton and go to New York. The train tracks actually basically all still exist. So we're in the running to get that back so that we have that rail link to New York. It would be incredible for our economy, for our whole region. And just with all those quality of life things, we already have the case. If you're an entrepreneur, you want a startup, do your startup here. You can go to your investor meetings in New York, right? You can get there really easily. It's only 2 hours away, but your overhead costs are going to be a heck of a lot less expensive here in Scranton. But if we have the train, that's going to open up just a world of possibilities. So we're really, really focused on that. Focus on those quality of life things. The organizational stuff I know is so boring for folks, but I love it. I went to business school, so it's like I really enjoy it. And getting ourselves on track and keeping pushing forward. Every time people feel better and better about their city, that makes me happy. So
yeah
we'll keep plugging away. And we'll hope to see you. You should come visit.
Well, I will. You sold me on it, number one. Number two, just connecting people. It seems to be sort of the theme now, and connecting people through rail. Now, here in Florida, they have something called the Bright Line, which is supposed to connect Miami to Orlando to Tampa. Yeah. And seeing that Scranton could potentially have that accessibility to New York really gives a lot of possibility there. So that is very, very, very cool. I am so honored to have this conversation with you. You know, it's not often that I discuss in such a candid and authentic way with a politician. So I love that politics are changing. I love that you are incorporating wellness and you're incorporating authenticity and all of that into leadership. I do a lot of work and we have a lot of interviews with CEOs and leaders of organizations. And one thing that I'm seeing is sort of things are shifting is that CEOs and politicians are really looking at authenticity, vulnerability, wellness, you know, how they can connect and take care of others. And I think that's just so important in life. And I love to see that transition. So I'm excited to come to Scranton. I'm excited to see.
And your daughter too. We've got some great office tour.
Okay. So we have like a landmark like tour that we're going to do.
Oh,
right?
Yeah. Oh my gosh. The world's largest Dundee is here at City Hall. So that's like the selfie move at City Hall. And then there's the pen paper building. Cooper's has an office gift shop, and it's the coolest. So you have to come.
Oh, I'm definitely going to be there. No doubt about it. And I was like, I didn't want to bring up too much about the office because there's a lot more for Scranton there, but it is going to drive us there and we're going to be there. And I hope to see you when I come there.
No, please. Oh my gosh. I would be offended if you didn't call.
I will be there. And we'll go eat some pizza. Oh, where should I eat when I come there? Where's the best place?
Oh, yeah. Oh, my gosh. It's such a tough one. Well, so for the office tour, you go to Alfredo's Pizza.
Yeah.
So that's in our Southside neighborhood. You go to Alfredo's. Poor Richard's Pub is there, too. My daughter can't go there, but she'll survive. And then Cooper's is really cool. That's like the pirate-themed restaurant. My daughter loves it. I love it. It's our favorite. There's other great food. We have incredible Italian food, Mexican food, Polish, just great food all over the place. We could go on forever. But the diasporas from the mining era are still intact. We have Ukrainian churches, right? We have the Lithuanian club. We have the Polish club. Like, we still have these enclaves. It's really, really neat. And the food is spectacular.
Wow. I can't wait. What a great way to close out the interview.
I know. Now I'm hungry for lunch.
What's some dining recommendations? I love it. Thank you so much, Paige. It was such a pleasure talking to you. And we will catch up soon.
Yeah,
see you in Scranton.
Thanks for listening in to The Alchemist Lounge. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review on Apple iTunes. To catch all the latest from Alex Atwood, you can check out his website at alexatwood.co. Thanks again, and we'll catch you next time at The Alchemist Lounge.